Hello and welcome. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today we're going to talk just a little about cotton. So if you are a cotton producer, we'd love to have you call into the show or ask us any questions you've got. We'll have a few experts on cotton on the show today. If you would like to give us a call, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us radio@agphd.com or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag just about right away here in the show. Before we do, I guess I'll just say, in terms of cotton, we don't talk about it much on the show. We don't raise any in our farm. Well, I'll take that back. We raise about a 10-square-foot plot every year.
Maybe a little bigger than that.
We're the largest cotton growers in the Dakotas, I'll say that. But anyway, you need lots of heat to raise cotton, and we just simply don't have it here in the northern part of the country. But anyway, one of the reasons why we've raised cotton is just to show that at our Ag PhD field day, and then also for drift reasons. We're trying to constantly work with new technologies, and as you know, dicamba and 2,4-D tolerant crops have been coming out over the last few years. Well, soybeans are the most sensitive crop in the world to dicamba. Cotton is considered by many the most sensitive crop in the world to 2,4-D. So we wanted to have cotton here and spray the new 2,4-D Enlist, or Enlist 1, I guess it would be. We wanted to spray that near the cotton and see if we would have any movement, any volatility, any drift. The answer is no. We have had none, and we've been testing this for like 6 years now. So we have been super excited about Enlist 1 and that new 2,4-D choline because we've never seen any injury on our cotton. But anyway, we'll probably talk about that a little bit later in the show. Right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, first question comes from Ed in Indiana. He said, I've heard you say on the show the other day that double pro or conventional versions of a hybrid can yield more than the SmartStax version in some
cases. Well, they might. Yep.
I've heard this for years. I've even seen it myself. I'm wondering why and what the difference is. Well, okay. So here's what we've got going on, Ed. And for anybody that isn't raising corn, you probably have heard that there are a lot of traits being stacked into these corn hybrids, whether it's the Roundup Ready tolerance or Liberty Link tolerance, but also the BT traits. So when we talk about the double pro, what we're talking about is putting in just above ground, mostly corn borer protection type products, and comparing that to when we put in a trait for rootworm protection. With that rootworm protection going in there, one of the traits that carries rootworm protection, it's just an energy-intensive trait, and it requires quite a bit of energy from the corn plant. And for that reason, a lot of times we'll see a little bit less yield. I'm not talking a lot, but a little bit, like maybe somewhere between 2 and 6 bushels less than a double pro version of the same hybrid, not always, but sometimes. And that's in the presence of no bugs. It doesn't take much corn rootworm feeding, and all of a sudden that flips completely around where you've got this SmartStax version that's going to out-yield the ones without the rootworm protection. So it just depends on you have to place those things where you need them. That's where you're going to have the most success. The other thing that we hear from time to time is growers will say, well, the yield was there. The yield was fine, but it was just a little bit wetter. Maybe it was a day or two longer than the conventional version or the double pro version. And I think that's very believable too, because you'll see in many cases, not with every hybrid, but with a lot of the hybrids, they'll actually carry a little more plant health. They've had less feeding on them and they stay alive longer. So sure, that may happen, and that doesn't scare me a bit. So where it does scare me is if I'm planting 110-day SmartStax in an area that I probably shouldn't plant any more than 105-day corn, then I'd say, hey, get real on your maturities. You don't need to stretch that just to get higher yields.
Okay, what Darren told you are the generally accepted beliefs about that. Now, there's nothing proven that's concrete that says, oh, SmartStax is going to yield less than VT Double. Now, I'm not here to try to sell you on SmartStax. I couldn't care less. But what I will tell you and what my belief is, with any of these traits, here's basically how it goes. They can't just inject the trait. So, for example, you go, oh, I've got this great conventional corn. How about if the seed company just injects the rootworm trait or the corn borer trait or whatever? Well, they can't do that. That's not the way that it works. They might be able to, but most of the time what they do is they've got it into one hybrid, and then they cross that hybrid with another one, or one inbred, and cross it with another inbred, I should say. So the point here is, what my belief and why sometimes there's yield drag with some of these things is because whatever they crossed it with to get the trait in there, you're carrying some of those genetics along with whatever the trait is. It's just like when people will tell you, well, this is the same hybrid except for it's got the trait and it doesn't. It's probably mostly the same hybrid, but in many cases, they've crossed it with something else. There's some other parentage somewhere in there in the genetics. So that's what I believe for that.
All right. Thanks for the question, Ed. We appreciate that. Got another one here. This is from Jason up in Alberta. He said, just wondering, have you guys done much work on actual grain nutrient analysis compared to the grain uptake numbers in the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app?
Nope, we haven't done that work. Now, I will say, we haven't done that work. We have done all kinds of trials, just seeing, okay, you put out this fertilizer, let's continue to soil test. And so, you might say, well, that sounds like work. Well, yeah, but it's not like super scientific where we're replicating it 50 times or anything else. So with the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app, we wanted all those replications. And so that's why we worked together with the International Plant Nutrition Institute, because they do a lot of that kind of thing. So we really do believe that the numbers in there are awfully close and have been proven around the world, certainly. But anyway, most of our numbers came from the International Plant Nutrition Institute, so there was a tremendous amount of work that went into those numbers. Well, again, we're going to talk a little about cotton production right after this on Ag PhD Radio.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the End Zone Bin System from Farm Shop MFG.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits, from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about cotton production on today's program. And one of the cool things that's happening in agriculture now with all the precision ag and just the traceability of what's happening in fields, why not bring that all the way through the processor and to the consumer? It's kind of a neat idea, and we've heard about it for a long time, and it's certainly happening in certain crops. But what about in cotton? We've heard some rumblings out in the industry about the E3 program that BASF is working on. So decided to bring in Jennifer Crumpler today with BASF to talk about that a little bit. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Excited to be here and talk a little about what we've got going on in cotton.
Yeah, I think that one of the cool things, too, with cotton is it's grown all over. And a lot of times I just think, well, I only think about the South, but there's cotton grown all the way out to California. So talk to us a little about E3 and what you're seeing with that program.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. Cotton is grown California, Arizona, all kind of down Oklahoma and some parts of it. So one thing, and you kind of mentioned it, is that we've seen from the traditional cotton, you know, that value chain is that we have kind of lacked that storytelling or telling our growers' story proactively and what they're doing on sustainability measures and metrics and data. And so what we're doing at BASF with our E3 Sustainable Cotton is working with our growers and capturing the information, capturing the fields where they're planting their cotton at, the different varieties of sustainable and FiberMax, capturing, you know, if that field is irrigated, not irrigated, how many, you know, what they sprayed on it, how many passes they made on it, and being able to kind of put that, all those metrics in all the different categories that we capture, putting those in, you know, one way to be able to tell the story. And what we've seen is that there's been an overwhelming desire from, you know, consumers through textiles, you know, textile mills and brands. It's been really exciting for us to be able to provide, you know, be that solution that everybody's wanting to know about.
There's a lot of stuff going on in our country right now, but there is really a feeling by many people that we talk to about, I'd sure like to buy things that are grown in the United States, that are made in the United States. And I think that's kind of a cool thing about this program, too.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. And you know what else has been really cool is that I grew up in a small town in the South, and we had three textile mills. And so when we saw, you know, the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, a lot of that being offshored, it really devastated those small southern towns, especially in the South, that had textile mills. And the exciting thing we've seen is that pride, and like you were saying, made in America, made in the USA, has come back. We're seeing textile mills come back to the U.S. The brand new textile mill that opened up in Vidalia, Louisiana, called Vidalia Mills. And, you know, they have committed to 100% using E3 sustainable cotton because of the traceability, the sustainability, that transparency that we provide. And it's exciting to see from there the brands that have come along, you know, whether it's Imogene and Willie, whether it's Raleigh Denim, or, you know, other brands coming. And so it's really excited to see that pride coming back, you know, not just from our American cotton farmers, but, you know, the workers and the textile mills for, you know, all through that value chain to be able to fulfill that, the need that's there for those Made in America products.
Yeah, that is fantastic. I really like that. I know through the Corn Belt, there's been the same kind of thing going on with ethanol, but not to the traceability like what you're talking about here with this cotton program. But a lot of folks just really excited that there are local jobs and local plants and just that pride. Now, you talk about some of the sustainability things and some of the practices that these growers are using raising the cotton, and I think that's really cool for us. We're really excited about advancements in crop production. I know water use efficiency and just reducing the amount of water it takes to grow a crop is one of those things. What are some of the agronomic things that E3 growers are doing?
Yeah, so we actually capture data in eight different categories. So we look at irrigation, water use and efficiency, pesticide management, soil and fertility management, greenhouse gas emissions, energy conservation. So we have multiple areas that we capture information in. You know, and when we look at our 2019 growers, the way that, and some of the things we're really excited about is that we can kind of debunk some of the myths that are out there around agriculture and especially around cotton production. So when we look at our growers who enrolled in our program in 2019, We had 48% of our growers used irrigation on some of their land, but we also had another 52% of our growers who just relied on natural rainfall. So, you know, that's kind of one story right there, is that we're able to give numbers to say, you know, hey, 52% of our growers, they just use natural rainfall. And of our 48% of our growers that used irrigation, those growers applied 233 gallons of water per pound. You know, and if you go and look up data and statistics that have potentially been put out there from outside sources of the ag industry, you know, some of those things that they try to say is up to 10,000, 20,000 gallons of water, which is just not true. And so that's where we're excited, because we can actually provide and point to data and, you know, sound data to give that information. You know, one thing we found too is that when we look at soil loss, you know, erosion and things, 48% of our growers lost less than one ton of soil, which if you kind of break it down a little bit smaller level, it was less than a half a pound per square foot. So when you think of soil, you know, that's pretty good statistics. And then we also can, you know, look in and look at our growers that are building. We had 78% of our growers that were building soil carbon through their production system. So, you know, there's a lot of different data points that we're able to go back and point to, and, you know, kind of be that, we kind of say we're that being proactive, telling the ag story and telling our farmer story versus the reactive standpoint that maybe it's taken in the past.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Having numbers to put to these different metrics here on the farm is great, and sharing that information is really good too. Talking with Jennifer Crumpler with BASF. Jennifer, how does a grower learn more about this program, and even for people that aren't growing cotton, just to learn more about what's going on here?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are, you guys can follow us on our social media channel. So we are on Facebook and Instagram at E3 Sustainable Cotton. You can find information that way, of course, in the areas of your local BASF rep. So if you in the areas of growing stone wool or fiber max cotton seed, definitely get in touch with your reps in the field. Or, you know, if you just want some other information about it, you can reach out to us at e3cotton@basf.com. We'll be more than happy to provide any kind of information to you that you would like.
Very good. Jennifer, thank you so much. Really appreciate what's going on, and great luck with the program here.
Hey, I appreciate it. And thank you guys for everything that you do. And if there's anything else we can help you with, please just let us know.
Oh, we appreciate that. Yeah, we're talking about cotton on today's program. And if you're just tuning in and you were expecting, oh boy, they're going to be talking about corn today. Well, we're going to talk about cotton, and we're also going to talk about some of the different things going on there in terms of fertility management, how to deal with some of the pests and so forth that are out there. Jennifer Crumbler was just talking about this new program, E3 Cotton, that is really kind of neat because they're tracking it all the way from the fields to the processor. I think it's awesome.
Okay, so Darren just made the comment, if you were hoping to hear about corn, what you got to understand with cotton is there are a lot of similarities to corn and soybeans. I mean, cotton's going to use N, P, and K and sulfur and micronutrients. Cotton needs good drainage. Cotton needs heat to grow. And in cotton, we use a lot of the same herbicides that we're going to use in corn and soybeans. Let me give you a list of some of the things we commonly talk about. Now, I want to get to this a little more later in the show too, but germoxone's used very commonly as a burn down. There are a lot of people that will use Prowl early on. We have Enlist, we have Xtend, we have Liberty Link Tolerant, we have glyphosate tolerant cotton. I mean, we have all these things in cotton. So there you go. We've got Enlist that we're using, Warrant, Outlook, Liberty, that we're commonly talking about, even Valor sometimes in cotton as a lay-by. So Roundup, the dicambas, I mean, there are just so many things that are actually quite similar. And so we're going to talk through just a little bit on the herbicides. And like Darren said, we will talk through some pest and fertility stuff yet with cotton. But just keep in mind that a lot of that applies to other crops as well. And certainly go to the Ag PhD Fertilizer Removal app. Whatever crop you raise, whether it is cotton, corn, soybeans, you can see how many nutrients your crop actually needs. We'll talk more cotton right after this.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done, to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Credit Extreme, the herbicide with dual salt technology that makes all the difference. Faster uptake, quicker rain fastness, and better control in variable weather, something we've all had our fair share of. When you need more powerful weed control for challenges like lamb's quarters and velvet leaf, with excellent safety to Roundup Ready crops, you need Credit Extreme. Nufarm and Credit Extreme, here to help.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
The next big thing is here. From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We're talking about cotton production on the show today, but we'll take any agronomic questions you may have as well. Let's head down to Arkansas. We got Jacob on with us right now. Jacob, how are you doing?
All right. How are y'all? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you. It sounds like you're busy, though. What you working on today?
Right.
There you go. Working on some rice today. How's the crop for you guys this year?
Rice is really good. Corn was pretty good. Our soybeans, they weren't very good at all. Cotton did pretty well. For us being out of 7 years and getting back in, we were pretty pleased.
All right, so let's talk about that cotton just a little bit, Jacob, since that was our focus today. With the cotton, you said you were out of it for a while. Now you got back in. Market conditions changed. What did you notice different than when you used to do cotton back 7 years ago?
The mechanics of cotton changed, and first of all, the mechanical requirements going away from the traditional basket pickers and the baler pickers. Cut our need for labor and increase our productivity in a day. But the agronomics of cotton changed. The storm tolerance has gotten much, much better. Yield increase, in some instances, a great yield increase. And meeting growth regulators, ticks, meeting more of that on a more regular basis to keep that plant in check so it produces, but also so it ticks better. We had some places that we didn't get enough picks on, and it showed up with a picker. It was harder to pick. It didn't pick as clean. Had to slow down. Just a lot of things that weren't in its favor. So we're going to have to up our picks rate next year to make sure that we keep that cotton short and fat.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I talked to growers raising all kinds of different crops around the world, and a lot of crops, they're definitely focused on what kind of plant structure are we going to have? How can we influence that plant structure to our benefit and to the benefit of the crop, really, if we've got crops that want to just grow like crazy and not be manageable anymore. That's not really desirable. So not surprising. They've changed varieties up quite a bit. I know when it comes to weed control, I've talked to a number of guys. They've liked some of the new technologies. What's that been like for you? Was that a change at all?
We had to pay attention closer to tank clean out because we've been growing on corn, soybeans, and rice for so long. We had to pay attention to herbicides a little closer because cotton is real sensitive. But a lot of the chemistries we were using in the past, except for dicamba, weren't dicamba tolerant cotton whenever we were growing cotton. Other than that, you know, a lot of things are still around. I guess Liberty wasn't as prevalent as it is now in Liberty cotton or in stack gene cotton.
Sure. How about crop rotation? I know you'd mentioned rice and corn and soybeans. Where does cotton fit into that, and what do you see for 2021? Do you see cotton acres growing?
I see our cotton acres growing. I think I see local cotton acres staying pretty much the same. There's two gens that are real local to us that are doing a good job. And so I think they're going to keep their customers and stay full. The thing about rotation that we've seen from soil tests over the years is whenever we were in cotton pretty heavy, we'd be lucky to have a point organic matter. Well, now with us growing corn and soybeans on those same acres, especially corn, we're seeing those organic matters double and in some instances triple, which is obviously helpful. So we're thinking a corn-cotton-bean rotation or maybe a corn-cotton-corn rotation maybe in our future on some of our sandier soils.
Very interesting. Now, when it comes to irrigation, is that something you're utilizing on the cotton?
Yes, sir. We're 100% irrigated. Have to be in the Mid-South, or at least we have to be to yield. And we've been irrigating ever since we were able to irrigate back in the 70s and early 80s.
Okay, yeah. There's
irrigation potential has gotten better, we've been more and more efficient with it, and corn's taught us you better keep it wet.
yeah, that's for sure. Well, especially in a year like 2020 with a good deal of the country was quite dry out there. Well, it's good to hear, though, Jacob. It's really nice to hear getting back into the cotton and potentially growing acres here for 2021, at least on your farm. Glad to hear you had a good crop, and good luck to you here the rest of the fall.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Let's head out to Georgia. We've got Mark with us right now. All right, Mark, we've talked to you about several crops here in the past. How about cotton? How big a part of your acres is that this year?
Hey, good afternoon. Cotton is about a third of our acreage. We're peanut farmers, and we look for corn and cotton to rotate our peanuts with. Cotton's an excellent rotational crop. We just need to get the price up some.
Yes, that's always the case, isn't it, with about everything we're raising? I know we've said that on corn and soybeans here the last couple of years. We're really happy to see those prices finally starting to rebound. How about cotton? What's the forecast for that?
Well, you know, we've come up with 10 cents somewhere in the last 30 days. I guess some of the trade policies that we have with China is stimulating a little bit of buying. Of course, the Texas crop is short. Texas produces about 50% of the U.S. cotton. But we're in the low 70s right now, and that's encouraging because 30 days ago, we just didn't think we'd see it.
All right, so talk to us about raising the crop then. What are the economics like if the price isn't great? Are there some things you can do to still make it work? You just don't get too carried away on certain practices?
Yeah, we don't do any recreational stuff anymore at all down here, as I'm sure you guys don't either. We've gone to minimum tillage. We just stay as close as we can on our major elements. Cotton is a good utilization of fertilizer. We have to put on our stiff dirt here about 120 units of nitrogen. Fertilizer is our biggest expense, followed by seed, but it likes potash also, and it doesn't require some of the like the corn as far as how much phosphate we have to put out. But it's you know, we spoon feed it. Ours is irrigated. Irrigation pays 9 out of 10 years in this area, it seems like. And hopefully that we don't have any more storms come through.
Yeah, storms are no fun, that's for sure. And, you know, you talk about the fertility. What is your yield goal for cotton? Do you have a fairly stable yield in your area, or does it bounce around a lot?
It's fairly stable. Look, as our genetics have improved, I was thinking about this today. 25 years ago, we wanted 2-ton peanuts, 200 bushel corn, and 2-bale cotton. Now it's 3-ton peanuts, 3-bale cotton, and 300 bushel corn. And it's easier to hit peanuts, 3 tons. Cotton is a little more difficult, but it's easier than it is hitting 300 bushel corn. I've never made 300 bushel corn in a field, on a whole field. But we've made that and better on cotton. As a matter of fact, our yield goal, we fertilize for 3-bale cotton.
Excellent. Yeah, that's fun to hear how things progress. I know for us on our farm too, Brian's always big into the numbers, and I think he's got yield data back to probably before I was born, just to see how we've come along on the farm. And it's fun having those goals. It's fun shooting for them. And like you say, with the hybrids and varieties we've got today, they got a lot of potential for sure.
Oh, it is. It's exciting. We're of course apprehensive. We don't know what's going to happen. We went full bore, as our neighbors did, into the dicamba the last couple of years, and you know, we're sort of concerned about that because that's worked real good with growing cotton in this area with the pigweed and other problems we have. But you know, we had a good crop. We got a lot of rain back 2 weeks ago. We had like 3 weeks of rain when those storms came through the Louisiana area. We were getting rain off that, and the early planted cotton was hurt as much as 40%, maybe even more than that. The later planted cotton is going to be better if we can dodge the storm this time.
Yeah. Well, good luck on that, Mark. We really appreciate all the info today. It's good to learn more about cotton. Good to hear from you all the time. So good luck to you here the rest of this fall, Mark.
Thank you. Same to you guys.
Talking about cotton production on today's Ag PhD radio program and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
I need the solve without the sell.
With NK Seeds, I get people I trust who show me where their hybrids and varieties fit in my field without the heavy sell.
So I get solutions that solve my problems from a partner who knows that success matters.
Find your solve at nkseeds.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from Farm Shop MFG.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's BellumHerbicide.com.
It's about time.
Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind in-furrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. Today in the show, we've been talking a little about cotton, and earlier we were discussing E3 cotton. But if you're a soybean farmer, E3 means something completely different. Darren, tell us what that E3 sustainable cotton, what the three E's stand for.
Well, socially equitable, economically viable, and environmentally responsible.
Okay, now what does E3 stand for when it comes to soybeans?
That stands for a three-gene stack of Enlist tolerance, Enlist herbicide tolerance, or 2,4-D tolerance, glufosinate tolerance, and glyphosate tolerance.
Right. Now, if you are a farmer who raises cotton and soybeans, this is going to be confusing for you. So please don't make the mistake thinking that you can go spray 2,4-D on that cotton, or thinking that your soybeans are somehow... What do they call it again, Darren? The sustainably, what's their terminology?
E3, socially equitable, economically viable, and environmentally responsible.
Thank you. Now, I would argue that maybe the E3 in soybeans is all those things, but it's not technically the BSF stuff that we were talking about earlier. So yes, there's an E3 in cotton and an E3 in soybeans, and they're two different things. So I feel for you if you raise cotton and soybeans and you're getting confused by this. When we talk about this E3 thing in soybeans, and there are Enlist cotton varieties, okay? So when we talk E3 in soybeans, we're talking Enlist. And with these Enlist-tolerant cotton varieties, you can go out there and spray Roundup or Liberty or the new 2,4-D choline called Enlist 1. By the way, there is an Enlist Duo. What that is, it's glyphosate together with the 2,4-D choline. But anyway, I wanted to talk just a little about herbicides real quick, and then we can jump back to the Ag PhD mailbag. And by the way, if you have any questions for us, anything you'd like to talk about here, the number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So when it comes to herbicide, just the few quick things that I want to mention. First of all, there are a lot of cotton producers who are using Gramoxone or Paraquat as the burn down. Paraquat's the active ingredient in Gramoxone. And I just want to caution you with this. Now, yes, I understand you have most likely been having Roundup resistant weeds, so you're not using Roundup in your burn down. I get that. But when we start talking about Paraquat, it is the most dangerous product that many farmers will handle on the farm. Now, it's no more dangerous than the gasoline that you pump in your car or your pickup every day, but that's the kind of level of toxicity that we're talking about. So you got to be much more careful with that than you do many other products. And I'm not saying you don't have to be careful with other things too, okay? Please don't misunderstand. We got to be careful with all pesticides. But Parazone kind of, or Gramoxone or any of these Paraquats, that kind of ratchets it up to a whole other level. So be real careful when you're using that. Now, one thing in cotton country, when there is Paraquat used, or if there is, let's say, Liberty or glufosinate used, the nice thing in cotton country is you got heat, and both of those herbicides work better in the heat. Quite frankly, most herbicides will work better in heat, but especially when we're talking about some of these contact killers like Paraquat and glufosinate or Gramoxone and Liberty, name brand products, you want good spray coverage, you want good heat, and ideally you'd like sunlight too, and you can get a fantastic control. I guess the only other thing that I'll throw out here when we start talking about herbicides in cotton is it usually takes multiple applications. I think about cotton a lot like I do sunflowers. The only difference is in cotton, there are a lot of herbicides labeled, sunflowers not very many. But anyway, the reason why I think about it this way is a lot of times you just don't have that crop canopy that you'll do in, let's say, wheat or corn. In wheat and in corn, you know, once you get the crop up pretty good, you have great crop canopy and it chokes out a tremendous amount of weeds. Well, with crops like cotton, there is still sunlight hitting the soil surface until late in the growing season and maybe all growing season. So anytime sunlight can get through the canopy, that means you've got much more time to have weeds. Along with that, there's obviously where cotton is raised, it's in the southern United States, not the northern United States, there's a longer growing season. So that means you have many more days, weeks, and months maybe that you have to protect that crop from those weeds that can really hurt your yield. Unfortunately, we have seen some disasters with Palmer pigweed and water hemp to the point where people literally had to destroy their cotton fields. I hope that does not happen to you. I hope you're using some pre-emerge herbicides and doing everything you can post-emerge to kill those weeds because, yeah, they're tough. The further south you get and the longer that growing season, it's a real, real challenge when it comes to weed control. So anyway, if you ever have questions in terms of weed control, anything we can do to help you, we are here for you. We're talking weed control just about every day. All right, let's jump back to the Ag PhD mailbag.
All right, first question. This one came on Twitter. By the way, you can find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. This came from Caleb. He said, I've noticed on your Ag PhD television program that you've added a high-speed planter. I'm wondering if you've seen a stand improvement or a stand difference versus your standard planter at standard operating speeds.
Okay, so we have demoed different high-speed planters for the last several years, side by side with our regular planter, and no, we have not really seen any difference. Other than, I remember the first time we ran a high-speed planter, and we were doing tests at 6, 8, and 10 miles an hour, and it was our farm manager who was running the planter, and he called me up after he had done what I had required him to do as a minimum to get, you know, these different trials done. And he goes, can I please slow down? I just don't like driving 10 miles an hour. I'm not comfortable with that. So anyway, if you don't like to drive 10 miles an hour, I get it. But the point is, these high-speed planters do work fairly well. Now, we're asking an awful lot of the planter. I mean, you stop and think about how many seeds are dropping every minute when you're going 10 miles an hour and you're planting at a heavy population. It's a lot. It's a lot to ask. So I want you to think, too, about your seed bed preparation. The better job you do with that, the better chance any planter has for success. And I just think that can be amplified a little bit more, obviously, when you're going 10 miles an hour as opposed to 4, like we usually will do. Anyway, one of the things, this goes clear back to years ago, I don't know, 20 plus years ago, when we used to do a lot of stuff with Francis Childs. He was the first guy in the United States raising over 400 bushel corn consistently. He used to hold the world record for corn production. And anyway, he just talked to us about, you know, instead of doing tillage at an angle, his last tillage was always with the row. And he would literally put a pop can on his planter from one field or from one end of the field to the other. He wanted to make sure that pop can never fell off. In other words, it had to be a nice smooth ride all the time. So just be thinking about that. And yeah, we have a lot of things to correct for that. We have, you know, in terms of variable down pressure, I mean, there are all kinds of adjustments that can be made on that planter, and some of them even on the fly. But the more even and consistent your field is and the better you've done for seedbed preparation, the easier it's going to be to get that great stand that you're looking for.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. I got one from Cindy. She said, you're talking about Pennsylvania smartweed. Do you ever have a problem in lawns? And if so, how do you control it there?
Yes, occasionally we do. I will say 2,4-D is not as good typically as dicamba. Now, I'm not a big fan of using dicamba in lawns because I don't want you coming in contact with it. Don't forget, dicamba contains benzene just like gasoline does, so it is a little bit more dangerous than what 2,4-D would be. If you use a high enough rate of 2,4-D, typically that will take it out, but if you're having problems, certainly you could always go to dicamba.
Okay, got a question from Corey. He said, I'd love to be able to attend one of your tile clinics someday. Do you plan to hold one of these in the near future?
Yeah, we are in January, and that I believe we're going to be doing virtual, at least for Ag PhD magazine subscribers. But yes, we're going to have another tiling clinic that will be free. Love to have you attend.
We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this. If you have a question for us, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Have resistant weeds invaded your cornfields? Tough 5EC, manufactured by Beltrim Crop Protection, can help. When added to the post-emergence tank mix, Tough 5EC synergizes the effectiveness of HPPD inhibitors on key broadleaf weeds. In fact, university field trials have shown 5 to 30% increased control of herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Now that's tough on weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Our phone lines are open here the rest of the show. If you have an agronomic question or would like to talk about what's going on your farm, 844-44-AG-PHD. Zane called in, but he left a message instead. He said, I'm driving through the hills of Massachusetts right now, poor reception area. But his question, he said, every time I look at open pollinated corn late in the season, it becomes a tangled mess. Just wondering if that's a nutrient deficiency or just the nature of the corn. You know, Zane, we don't have a huge amount of experience growing that, but every time we have, it's looked like that. And so I think it's just the corn. I don't know that it's a nutrient deficiency. Now, that's not saying that you couldn't have some other
right
management things that could change that a little bit. But on our farm, we've seen the same thing. And believe me, we've tried to meet all the nutrient needs of that crop.
Yeah, because keep in mind, modern breeding with the hybrid corn is giving us at least more of what we want. And long term, we're actually looking for more changes with the breeding. So let's say we see shorter corn hybrids for grain production, because who wants to harvest something that's 12 feet tall? What good does that do you? All you're after is the ear. I mean, yeah, it's different if you want silage or just lots of residue, whatever. But most farmers out there don't want all that residue. So breeders continue to work for those kind of things. Yeah, and breeders were looking for years ago stuff that didn't look like a tangled mess at the end of the season. And ultimately, of course, their number one thing is higher yields when they are developing hybrid corn.
All right. Got some research data from NDSU, from Kansas State, and from the Fluid Fertilizer Group about planter time fertilizer. This is all from Jacob. And Jacob said, I'm looking to make some changes to my planter for 2021's corn crop. Now, I had settled on doing 2x2 with my fertility, but after reading online about the extra weight, cost, and potential downtime with 2x2, I turned my attention to a 2x0 surface dribble 2 inches over from the seed. And the results in the studies that I found show no or only slight edge to 2x2 versus the 2x0. However, none of the differences are statistically significant. So I sent you some screenshots of those studies. And when 2x2 yielded the same as 2x0, are we to conclude that, number one, the corn was able to utilize both the nitrogen and phosphorus surface applied? Number two, the soil already had great phosphorus, so surface P was not needed. Or three, the yield differences were only due to nitrogen and P that stayed on the surface. So anyway, he said after looking at this, he's thinking he might go the 2x0 because yield is similar and it costs a lot less.
Okay, so first of all, when he sent us this data and these screenshots, one of the things that's the most frustrating to me is when we all know something is better most of the time, but we look at the LSD, the significant difference, basically, and like on one here, it's 22 bushels. You know why that is? Because they haven't run enough replications. So this is one of the things I've even told our own people. When we're going to do research, if you're only going to do one trial and just one replication of stuff, you're just wasting your time. You got to do a bunch of replications. You got to repeat it in different areas, different years. I mean, it takes so much work and so much expense to actually run good trials, as opposed to trials where the difference is 22 bushels. Well, my goodness, I mean, 22 bushel difference. Just think about the corn hybrids you raise in your farm. How many of them are within 22 bushels of the next hybrid? Now, if you had a 21 bushel difference from one corn hybrid to the next, you'd go, wow, I'm planting that one. And I tell you the LSD is 22 and you go, wait a second, you're telling me they're statistically the same? I'm not going to believe it. Anyway, here's my point. Or here's where I'm going with this and my answer to your question. The reason why I don't like the 2x0 and laying it on the soil surface is you're most likely not putting on nutrients that can move well with moisture. So in other words, nitrogen, sulfur, boron. You're most likely talking about P and K, I assume. When you talk about P and K, to think that they're going to land the soil surface and then they're magically going to move down into your root zone when your crop needs them shortly, that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. The other thing is, even 2x2 is not bad because now at least you're getting down into the soil probably 3 to 4 inches deep. That's decent. But if you look at most farms' fertility in the top 2 inches, they're already in pretty good shape on P and K. But most of the root mass on corn, for example, is 4 to 8 inches deep. Well, if the roots are at 4 to 8 inches and we've got our fertility at 0 to 2 inches, maybe down 3 or 4 inches, that's telling us that we're not putting it in the best possible spot. we do like just a little bit of in-furrow fertilizer, but you got to be real careful with the rate. The higher the rate you go, the greater risk you take. And just like in some of these things here, you know, I don't know what they put on for a product. I don't know how, how much salt there was. I don't know the answers to all these things. Yes, you have it in some of them, in some of the trials, but a bunch of the trials, they don't. So we want something low salt. We got to keep the rate low. We usually water it down even to safen it even more. And then we like stuff in furrow, and it's not just about the yield. Yep, we'll gain yield sometimes, but we also get faster emergence, which can really help us. And that typically, one of the ways that helps us is at the end of the season, we have drier grain. So would I put it 2x0? No, I would not. Now, I totally understand where you're going from or where you're coming from with 2x2 takes money. It takes time. There's possible breakdown. Our dad was totally opposed to putting any fertilizer in the planter because when he wanted to plant, he wanted to plant. Because where we farm, we have just a few days to get that seed in the ground. If it doesn't get in the ground, we lose yield, which meant loss of money. And he just said, well, I mean, if I'm delayed with planting one day, that might cost me as much as what that fertilizer gained me. But now we have, I believe, better equipment. We can get over the acres a little faster. The equipment's much, I mean, it's just, it's so much wider than what we used to have. And now we were just talking about high-speed planters and everything. So there are a lot of ways to still get those acres in and be fairly timely. And we have found advantage a lot of times by doing a little bit in furrow or doing some 2x2. Our caution, too, with the 2x2 is be careful how you're putting any coulters out there, because we don't want to mess up that seed planting depth. We got to keep that seed depth consistent. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's easy. Another thing that is an option, and this is something you could think about if you wanted to do this. So we've got three guys that work for us on our farm. And what we've done like a year ago where we couldn't get fall tillage done in the fall of 2019 going into 2020. We couldn't get the fall tillage done because it was so stinking wet. We ended up having to do a bunch of work with a coulter machine. So we actually ran a strip till machine in the spring, and we basically freshened up the zones. We put fertilizer out that way, and then with the planter, we could basically just plant. So that was a pretty slick way to go. If you have somebody else on the farm, that's kind of nice because now you've got a warmer seed bed. Now you've got a better seed bed. Now you've got that fertilizer down and you don't have to do anything with your planter. So, and a machine like that certainly could be used in the fall and used in the spring. So just another option for you. Yep, there's a lot we could talk about with this, but I just wanted you to understand the reason why I'm not in favor of laying P and K on the soil surface. I don't think that's a real great idea. Go ahead, Darren.
Okay, very good. All right, got a question here. This is, oh boy, we're out of time, aren't we? We have to be a little bit quick then. This one comes from Marion. He said, I've got a water treatment lime that I can use on my farm. I've got cash rented ground. Just wondering what rate you would use. Now, looking at the lime, it looks like it's about 25.9% calcium. So you're going to have to use quite a few tons since it's such a low calcium percentage. And that's fine. That's no problem. Looks like pH runs between 5 and 6 with the buffer in the 6.2 to 6.4.
Okay, so you got to be very careful with that lime.
And they said they can do variable rate.
Well, that's great. I really want variable rate because with lime, if you start getting too much on, we've made that mistake, and then you raise the pH too much, you lose yield because your pH gets raised too much, then you got to spend money in elemental sulfur to drive the pH back down. It's just lose, lose, lose. So be real careful what you're doing. We usually would tell you use small grids and then use variable rate. In terms of exactly how much to use, your lab should be able to answer that question. We just never want to exceed about 2,400 pounds of actual calcium. Yep, I'm not talking lime. I'm talking actual.
And also you can do the calculation on your base saturation calcium. You get a lot of them in the 45 to 50% range. I would try not exceeding 65% to start with, and then you may adjust after that. So maybe get up to 65% on base saturation calcium, see where your pH is at that point, and make adjustments accordingly. Thanks for the question today, and thanks to you for listening to our program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.